March 14th meeting of the House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules to Order, and open a public hearing on House Concurrent Resolution 4. I meant open a public hearing and work session on House Concurrent Resolution 4.
Madam Chair, HCR 4 declares March 30th, 2007 to be Robert Doc Newell Day in Oregon.
Great, and we are very happy to have Representative Thatcher, one of the chief sponsors, as well as, I guess, where did he go? Representative Primmel is here, too. Please join us at the witness table and tell us.
Well, I just thought we'd give you your own microphone here.
Good morning to you both, and please tell us about your resolution.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the rest of the committee, I'm pleased to sponsor House Concurrent Resolution 4, the measure before you today, which celebrates the 200th anniversary of Robert Doc Newell, one of Oregon's most interesting but least celebrated founders. In 1841, Doc Newell founded the town of Shampooey in what is now a part of my legislative district. He was present at the famous organizational meeting of the first American government on the Pacific coast at Shampooey, as depicted in the mural over the rostrum in the House chamber. If you look closely at the House mural when you go in there today, you can see Doc Newell with his lifelong friend and fellow trapper, Joe Meek. They called for the vote, or divide. In the end, the American settlers prevailed over the British Hudson Bay Company men by a vote of 52 yes to 50 no. He was a man of many accomplishments. We celebrate these accomplishments at the bicentennial of his birth at the end of this month. But we also use this opportunity to recognize those first Oregon settlers who farmed the rich green earth of the Willamette Valley, and those who made a government of and by the people and created a path west for the many, many Oregonians to follow. I thank the Oregon Society Daughters of the American Revolution and the Friends of Historic Shampooey for bringing this history forward. We will mark Newell's 200th birthday at a celebration at the historic Newell House at Shampooey at 3 o'clock on Friday, March 30th. There are also special opening ceremonies planned in the House of Representatives on Monday, April 2nd. It is rumored that Robert Doc Newell and his friend Joe Meek will pay our current House members a visit. I thank the committee for considering the bill and ask it be passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Okay, Representative Krummel, good morning.
Good morning, Chair Rosenbaum. Thank you very much to you and members of the committee for hearing House Concurrent Resolution Number 4. And I'm pleased to be here today. Robert Doc Newell was one of Oregon's founders, as you just heard, and he seemed to be at all of the key places at the critical times. Shampooey for the famous divide, where the American government in Oregon began, at the first legislature, the first laws, the first newspaper, the Oregon Spectator, the first drive to drive a wagon into the Willamette Valley, and the first commercial navigation, and the list goes on and on. He was definitely a man of first. We celebrate the 200th anniversary of his birth because it reminds us of Oregon's beginning. As a mountain man with his friend Joe Meek, he blazed the first wagon trail into the Willamette Valley. He settled at Shampooey, where French Prairie met the Willamette River, started a farm, a store, and eventually a town which after the flood was called Newellsville. Try to say that one really fast. He voted with the American settlers at the Shampooey Divide on May 3, 1843, and was instrumental in forming the first American government on the Pacific Coast, as you just heard. He and eight others voted in the Organic Acts, Oregon's first laws based on the laws of Iowa, and served with distinction in the provisional legislature. He served as a legislator in the provisional, territorial, and state governments of Oregon, but was always in the people's houses. He founded and platted the town of Shampooey, watched it grow from a gathering place along the river to a bustling wheat shipping town, only to see it swept away by the Willamette River in a 50-foot-high flood, which wiped out the town. But he gave personally refuge to 200 of his neighbors in the winter after the flood, and through his generosity helped these early Oregonians survive. He worked to site Oregon's first capital, at one point offering to donate 4 square blocks of Shampooey to locate the capital there. He started the first commercial transport business from Shampooey to Oregon City with keelboats, which took the Willamette Valley wheat to market. And he was a founding director of the first newspaper, the Oregon Spectator. He was a great friend to the Native Americans, and they respected him for his fairness, and especially when he was acting as the first Indian sub-agent in Oregon. And his greatest public service was as commissioner and agent to the Indians of the Pacific Northwest. His understanding of the Indian way of life, careful analysis of the conflicts between Indians and settlers and peaceful negotiations, and helped to avoid conflict and promoted understanding. He understood and worked with the Indian treaty rights and promoted peace and understanding between settlers and Native Americans in early Oregon. Today, his name is perpetuated by Newell Creek, east of Oregon City in Clackamas County. Oregonian editor Harvey Scott announced Robert Newell's death in 1869 by saying, "No one's name is more familiar to the people of Oregon than that of Dr. Newell." And thank you very much for indulging us today, and I appreciate being here and moving this to the floor, and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? I guess you've answered them all. Okay, thank you very much, Representative Kremel. And next we'll call Judy Van Atta. Please come forward. Good morning.
Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee, my name is Judy Van Atta. I am the director of the Newell House Museum, which is owned and operated by the Oregon State Society, Daughters of the American Revolution. Our mission is to promote education, patriotism, and preservation of history. I'm going to keep mine simple because Representative Thatcher and Representative Kremel did a wonderful job on giving the points about Robert Newell. I'd like to read what Jesse Applegate, his peer, wrote and summed up Newell's life in this manner. "Though Newell came to the mountains from the state of Ohio in his youth, he brought with him to his wild life some of the fruits of early culture, which he always retained. Though brave among the bravest, he never made a reckless display of that quality, and in the battlefields, as in councils, his conduct was always marked by prudence and good sense. Though fond of mirth and jollity and the life of social reunions, he never degenerated from the instincts of a gentleman. Though his love of country amounted to a passion, and his mountain life was spent in opposition and rivalry to the Hudson's Bay Company, he never permitted his prejudices to blind his judgment, or by work or act do injustice to an adversary. Of undoubted truth and honor, he was the unquestioned leader and advisor of men in his class, both British and American, and enjoyed to a great extent the confidence of all parties in the country. His influence in the early days was therefore great, and both in public and private life, he was frequently called upon to exert it. It is enough to say in his praise that it was always exerted for good." Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Okay, thank you very much. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House Concurrent Resolution 4? Please come forward.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the Rules Committee, my name is Greg Leo. I'm president of the Friends of Historic Shampooig, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to promote and interpret the social and natural history of Shampooig and of Oregon. We are here today in strong support of HCR 4. Robert Newell was an incredible guy. He seemed to turn up every place in early Oregon. And, of course, as being one of the first legislators, one of the first nine, he actually, I think, maybe the only one that served in both the provisional, territorial, and state legislatures. The bill before you today has one flaw, however, that we would like to correct, and that is, by amendment, we would like to remove the terms Whitman Massacre, and I believe that's on lines 24 to 25. And we would say, first of all, you know, the early Indian relations between the settlers and, you know, Native Americans has, you know, been a subject of some discussion and, of course, changes as we've thought about it. As I learned Oregon history in fourth grade, it is somewhat different today. We think differently about it. And so in the interest of, you know, making sure that this offends no one and that it is, in fact, carefully resolved, we would suggest that lines 24 and 25 be removed from the bill. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions about this remarkable man. I would also just say that thanks to Judy Bonata's good work, a history of Robert Newell has been provided to members of the legislature. It is a great read if you're interested in political history especially. It really shows the cross currents that were the cauldron that created early Oregon. So with that, I offer that testimony and appreciate your hearing the bill today.
Great. Thanks for your comments. Any questions? Mr. Stembridge.
Well, Madam Chair, I just wanted to mention that the amendment that Mr. Leo is recommending is in HCR 4-1 amendment. We put copies out on the table there. You have copies yourselves.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay.
Thank you very
much. Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on HCR 4? Okay. Seeing none, we are in a work session.
I just want to make a comment.
Representative Roblin.
I just want to make a comment because, you know, in 2 short years, we'll also be celebrating the sesquicentennial. And this, to me, is a perfect segue to that, to start acknowledging those people who really helped the sesquicentennial happen. And his name is all over the founding of the state. And so I appreciate the opportunity to have this bill here.
Thank you. We have a motion. Representative Vice Chair Buckley.
Madam Chair, I move the -1 amendments to HCR 4.
Representative Buckley has moved the -1 amendments to HCR 4. Is there objection? Seeing none, the -1 amendments are adopted. Vice Chair Buckley.
Madam Chair, I move that HCR 4 be sent to the floor with a be adopted as amended recommendation, please.
As amended,
mm-hmm.
Did you say?
It is.
Okay. Vice Chair Buckley moves HCR 4 to the floor as amended with a do pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, will you, the clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Berger?
Aye.
Representative Buckley?
Aye.
Excused?
Aye.
Representative Roland?
Aye.
Representative
Thatcher?
Excused?
Aye.
And the motion carries. HCR 4 will go to the floor, and Representative Thatcher will carry. And I will close the public hearing and work session on House Concurrent Resolution 4. Do we have a sign-up sheet, Shauna?
Thank you.
And
Thank you very much.
I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2761, and I think Vice Chair Buckley might like to tell us about this bill.
Can I go down to check it out?
You may.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. For the record, I am Representative Peter Buckley, representing District 5 in South Jackson County. I appreciate you taking the time to hear House Bill 2761, as our esteemed committee administrator would tell you, if asked. This bill would allow for counties, and I want to stress the word allow, for cities and counties to adopt the instant runoff voting system of election. It's a proposal that's come forth multiple sessions now, and I do have some constituents who have traveled here all the way from South Jackson County today to testify, and I'm very happy to see them here. I'm very glad that they can be here to weigh in. Instant runoff voting, as the chart that you're receiving, is a fairly simple concept. It allows voters to rank candidates in order of preference when they vote. The first choices are then tabulated, and if a candidate receives a majority of first choices, then that candidate is declared the winner. If no candidate wins a majority of the first place votes, then a runoff is simulated. The candidate with the fewest number of first place votes is eliminated in that runoff. The process is repeated using a voter's second-ranked candidate if their first choice is eliminated. This cycle repeats until a candidate receives the majority of votes. And as you can see on the chart provided, it's a fairly, you know, we can be as complicated as you want to imagine it to be, but it's fairly simple. The main question is, when does a candidate reach a majority? And do we have a separate runoff election with the cost of a second runoff election, or actually can we use this system? Several other jurisdictions are using this instant runoff system, including San Francisco. There's a letter in your packet, hopefully in your file, from Commissioner Jeff Cogan from Montgomery County, offering his report and mentioning that instant runoff has been adopted in Oakland, California, San Francisco, California, Burlington, Virginia, Minneapolis, Minnesota, Cambridge, Massachusetts, Ferndale, Michigan, and Tacoma Park, Maryland. It is possible to put this in place, and again, I want to stress, this would allow, not mandate, the placement of instant runoff voting for our cities and counties. Some of the benefits of instant runoff voting, it allows for better voter choice and more democratic elections by eliminating the spoiler effect of third-party candidates. This has become increasingly an issue in our country, given the closeness of the 2000 election, and there are still people who are will argue about what happened in Florida, and if there was something such as instant runoff voting in place, that would have not been a factor. I also want to make note of Senator Westland's run for the governorship in this last election. He pulled out for fear of being a spoiler. His voice was taken out of the race because of that spoiler factor. While this will have some cost to counties, if they choose to put it into place, it will have some cost to counties in terms of developing the system to count the ballots, and will have some cost to the Secretary of State's office to design the ballots that would be used for instant runoff. The potential is that election costs will be eliminated by having a second runoff election, official runoff election, since we'd be doing it instantly. And with that, I'd be happy to take questions from the committee. I'd also be happy to duck them and pass on to other folks who are have studied this issue and have a great passion for it.
And Representative Buckley, if we could get a copy of that letter from Commissioner Cogan.
Yes, absolutely.
The members haven't, actually.
Very good.
I don't have it in my file. I don't have it either. So, yes, Vice Chair Berger.
Representative, this would only apply to local elections, correct?
Cities and counties.
So, and most are not partisan elections. In other words, there are no party label on the ballot in most of those, are there?
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Berger, in my home county of Jackson, the county commissioners is a partisan election.
But most cities are not. That's
Madam Chair, Representative Berger, that's clear. It's true.
Okay. Do you have any sense...
Follow-up?
Yeah, thank you. Sorry, Madam Chair. Do you have any sense of... this is a difficult question to frame. It's probably going to be even a harder one to answer. I'm a little concerned that outside of maybe Jackson County, this is a solution in search of a problem. Do you have any sense of... How many runoffs there have been in the state in the last election cycle that would have been solved by this? Do you understand what I'm... it's a difficult question to frame, so you can duck the question.
I will duck. I don't have any information on the number of runoff elections that we have had in our state recently. I will note, though, it's not simply a Jackson County issue. We do have city council races, for instance, where we do have multiple candidates for one seat in the city council, and this would help, I think, in that regard. But I think jurisdictions all throughout the state have the same issue. And statewide, if we eventually would want to move to that, using the cities and counties as kind of a laboratory to see how this works, statewide, this would answer some of the problems that we have with spoiler candidates statewide.
Okay. Thanks.
Representative Roebling.
Yeah, I guess my question would be more to, you know, we have a statewide system now for kind of the first time that's really worked through the election system, you know, where we've got all the registered voters in one thing. We've got new machines that are working and we're feeling pretty comfortable with. We finally got that all working in a way that, you know, whether it's a city election, county election, or a state election, we kind of have the same system in place that works. And this would say, let's go back to what we were doing before when we didn't have all that in place, because there'll be some counties doing it, some not. They're going to have different kinds of machinery, different kind of programs. You know, have you had any idea the kind of cost, the kind of impact that's going to have on all those different counties?
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, there is a cost, and it will be the county's choice. If it should decide locally that they would like to do this, it would be their choice to incur that cost upon themselves to figure out the vote counting system that they would use. using this process. But I would state that the process, to a large part, won't change. We'd still be voting by mail. You simply would be getting a ballot that would say, for instance, if the campaign was Representative Roblin versus Representative Byrd and Representative Hunt, if all three of you are on the ballot, all three of your names would be on the ballot, and you'd have the opportunity to list, well, I'm going to vote for Representative Berger as my first choice, obviously, and Representative Roblin as my second choice, and the majority leader as my third choice. And then my ballot would be counted that way in case none of you got 50% of the vote. Representative Hunt would be eliminated if most voters put him not as their first choice, and then there would be an instant count between the first place votes between the two of you, and we would have a winner.
Follow up?
Yes, follow up. Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my bigger question is, are we going to have two different separate ballots? Is the machine that's going to run this the same machine? The machines we have now that are consistent around the state, I don't think do this, so does that mean that we have in our envelope, we're going to have two different ballots based on this, which costs more money for both sending in and getting out, making sure that we, you know, don't have to put that extra stamp on that deal. All of those kinds of issues that make mail-in ballots a more difficult thing if they're being returned to you because you didn't have enough money on it and so on. So those just really make me nervous with
and
respect to
Representative
this.
Buckley, you're welcome to answer that, but we also do have several county clerks and officials signed up to testify.
Okay. So. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, again, there will be a cost. There will be a logistical challenge for counties to set this up if they should so desire. But again, I believe that the vote by mail system would not be, we still would be voted by mail. The counting would be the challenge that we have to face.
Okay. One more follow-up.
Follow-up.
Short one. So the way it's written, the counties would be responsible for buying the new machinery and the new, any of the stuff that has to take care of this ballot separately. That becomes a county responsibility as opposed to the state.
Madam Chair, Representative Roblin, yes, if a county or a city or county should decide to use this system, the county would be responsible for those costs. The Secretary of State would be responsible for the cost of designing the ballot that would be used. So there would be cost involved. We don't have a fiscal that's listed on this. But again, I just want to emphasize that there will be the choice of the people in that county should they so desire.
And we will be hearing from the Secretary of State shortly. Other questions? Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to commend you for bringing this forward. I think this is, I mean, Oregon has a long tradition of being on the cutting edge of elections, and I think this is another area where I think we have the opportunity to do that. And, I mean, the way you've designed it here is basically allowing it to be, to have a trial run, to have a test case, and probably some local governments. Any reason why you did just cities and counties as in addition to giving the option to school districts or parks district or other local governments in addition to that? Any particular reason?
Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, after your kind words, I've changed my choices. I'm going to vote for
I was going to say, I knew I lost. I knew I lost.
The idea behind this was to try to make the bill as simply and as non-threatening as possible. And given the fact that, you know, given that cities and counties would be allowed to choose this mechanism for a city or county election, seemed to be the simplest and most straightforward way to go to set up a pilot.
If I could follow up. So this could be used in either, that's the choice of the local government. It could be used in a primary or a general. I'm thinking of an example. I think the city of Portland had a mayoral primary where there were some 11 or 15 or 17 candidates running for mayor. I mean, the person elected mayor could have gotten, you know, just 15 or 20% and won the primary under this kind of a system with just one election. If it were used in the primary, they could, you could be ensured that the winner actually had the support of a majority of the folks.
Chair Rosenbaum, that's correct. That's what it's designed for. In Ashland, for instance, we, for whatever reason, we set up our charter, we elect our city council people by district, and we'll often have cases where we'll have four or five candidates running for one seat, and only one or two in another seat. And you look at the roster of the four or five, and you think, well, the person who actually wins them actually may not have the support of the majority of the people in the city.
Okay. Seeing no other questions, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
I will temporarily close the public hearing on House Bill 2761 and reopen the work session on House Concurrent Resolution 4 and ask that the rules be suspended for the purpose of allowing Representative Thatcher to vote on HCR 4. Is there objection? Seeing none. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote?
Aye.
Great. We're glad to hear it, and you will be carrying this on the board.
Thank you.
That is a rare I vote for you in this committee.
Refreshing. Close the work session on HCR 4 and reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2761. We have quite a list of people signed up to testify, and a couple are from more than 100 miles away, so we will call them first.
Okay.
Nicole Williams and Pamela Vavra, please come forward. Good morning.
Good morning. My name's Nicole Williams. I'm the Clatsop County Clerk, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Association of County Clerks. And we are just want to raise some concerns to your committee regarding the instant runoff voting. As you have heard from Representative Buckley, Oregon counties currently do not have the systems in place at this time to accommodate instant runoff voting. This would require us, if this was implemented, to purchase new vote tally equipment or have ours somewhat redesigned. And I have to tell you that I have spoke with our vendor, Election Systems and Software, which actually is not the vendor for the entire state, but the majority of the state, and they do not have plans to implement this type of a system in the near future. In San Francisco, where they implemented this system in 2004, they used precinct counters at the polls. And that is one of the reasons why I think that it is somewhat of a success in San Francisco. Voters, because they go to the polls, they're able to insert these ballots directly into the machines to cast their ballots. And at that time, the machines, if they aren't filled out correctly, actually return the ballot to the voter. And a poll worker right there is able to point out the problem on the ballot and give the voter another chance to recast the ballot correctly. As you know, we are vote by mail, and we don't have the ability to provide that information to the voters when they cast their ballots. Printing costs would increase. Separate ballots would have to be printed for the city or the county should they choose this system. In addition, separate ballots would mean higher costs for the mailing of the ballots. And to answer one of your previous questions, we would have separate ballots because we would still have to count the other races using our regular optical scan systems. The instant runoff voting ballots would have to be processed separately and handled differently. Therefore, we would have to keep them segregated into boxes that are separate from the regular ballots. We would need additional room and just more storage containers for those. Because we would most likely have to hand tally these races if we don't have the systems in place to count them, room for error would increase. This is a much more complicated method to tally the votes than what our boards are used to right now. And with the average age of our board workers almost around age 70, I believe that would take us days, if not weeks, to release the first unofficial results to the public of these races using this system. In San Francisco, results are not issued for a couple days in races that the instant runoff voting applies, and they have computer systems actually tallying these votes right now. Voters tend to get more confused with this type of system. In San Francisco, again, the city spent $776,000 in education outreach efforts and did more than 200 community demonstrations to provide voters information on this system. And despite these efforts, mistakes were still made on the ballots, and there are reports that voters left the polls frustrated and confused. The strongest argument I've heard towards this system is to get rid of the runoff election and to have everybody vote in one election, thus reducing costs for entities that have runoff elections. In Oregon, most of the cities, I actually personally don't know of a city, and I there may be some in Multnomah counties that actually have runoff elections, but most of the cities do not have a runoff election right at this time. And the majority of the cities, they actually elect their city council members in November of even years, which is a very high turnout election, as we know. That's all I have for the committee today. If you have any questions, I would certainly love to answer them.
Any questions, Representative Thatcher?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You were talking about printing out different ballots. I guess I could picture what I'm maybe trying to verify with you is if a jurisdiction or a city decided to, within a county, decided to choose the IRV, would you then, because they're within the county that hasn't adopted it, I guess that would make it kind of complicated, wouldn't it? I'm just trying to picture how that would work. If you've got overlapping jurisdictions, different ballot methods, or would it really make a big difference? I'm just trying to figure out, because it sounds like you would still have different issues on the ballot. And
Chair Rosenbaum, Representative Thatcher, we, you know, just working through this, I would think that a county, if a city chose to, for example, in my county, I have four cities. If, say, City of Seaside chose this method, I would actually want to print the separate ballot for just the City of Seaside race. And in addition, that would have the IRV, methodology used. And then I would insert that in with the regular ballot and send that off to City of Seaside residents. Does that answer your question?
Okay, so they would have two ballots for... And that's
right.
What you're talking about, mailing expense.
Yes.
Okay.
It would increase mailing costs and printing costs.
That's what I'm trying to understand. Thanks.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Vice Chair Buckley.
Just comment to point out in Section 3, Sub 3 of the bill on page 2, it does state that if a county or city conducts an election on any date using instant runoff voting system, the county or city shall bear the cost of the election. So if a city should desire, the city would have to bear that cost, not the county.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Okay, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Pamela Favre. I live in Ashland, and I don't know if you need my full address. It's 2800 Dead Indian Memorial Road. And I'm here primarily to thank Representative Buckley for bringing this bill forward. In the city of Ashland, which is not atypical, we have the luxury of having a highly involved electorate, and we oftentimes have more than two candidates running for office. Recent election results are what have prompted the concern for instant runoff. As you know, because separate runoff elections are very costly, most communities do not have runoff elections, and yet there may be a need for them. In 2000, for example, we had four candidates running for mayor, and the winner was elected with less than 45% of the vote, which is close to a majority. But in 2002 and 2004, in the city of Ashland, we had city councilors elected with less than 31% and less than 36% of the vote. And with a runoff election, it would have ensured that our city councilors were truly representing the majority of the city. Recently, in 2006, we had another election for a city councilor. So in the last four elections of city councilors and mayors, we have had problems with more than two or three candidates running for office. The city commissioned a charter review committee in fall of 2004 to study what changes might be needed for the charter. As part of their process, they invited the public on many occasions to come and explain any problems that the current charter was causing and might require a fix. One of their members reported that the committee had received more interest in instant runoff voting than in all other issues combined. However, the Charter Review Committee was saddled with reviewing a charter that had not been reviewed in more than 30 years. So there were so many things that they had to look at. They did not get around to actually making a recommendation one way or the other. However, they did not issue any objection to it. Since that time, a voter initiative petition has been circulating in order to demonstrate or investigate the level of support for this method. And in 10 days, this group was able to gather more than 400 signatures, validated signatures of registered voters in the city of Ashland. I do acknowledge that there are costs associated with this, and it's something that the city of Ashland is grappling with. But we recognize that democracy is sometimes expensive. And I do call your attention to the fact that the Oregon State Constitution specifically provides for preference voting. So communities that have wanted to take advantage of this provision in the state constitution have been told by the Secretary of State Bill Bradbury and by the Director of Elections John Lindbach that they are really unable to take advantage of this enhanced democracy until this specific legislation is passed. And the reason is, as Mr. Lindbach has explained to me, his fear is that if every community adopts their own system of instant runoff, where the rules are a little bit different for this community or a little different for that one, there might be chaos. And so the purpose of this legislation is indeed to satisfy that concern brought forward by the Director of Elections, to have a consistent manner by which the ballots are counted and the rules are established. So I thank you very much for considering this, and I'd be very happy to answer any questions.
Representative Roblin.
Yeah, just one. Have you looked at the San Francisco elections, and have you noted if after they've done the instant runoff, if it changed the outcome of the election? Would the person who had gotten the most votes in the original got the most votes in the second? Because one of the things that I have concerns about is that you implement a whole new system, and the outcome never changes. The only thing that's changed is we spend a lot more money making people feel comfortable that the outcome was right in the first place. So, you know, we have some places that are doing it. Have we looked at all to see if after they have extensively done this, did the outcome ever change? Had the person with the most votes won each time or not? Do you know the answer to that question?
Right. Madam Chair, Representative Roblin, I think that there are other people who are planning to speak who have more information about that. I can tell you that the Ashland Daily Tidings very carefully analyzed one of our city council races in order to ascertain whether or not instant runoff voting would have made a difference between the plurality winner and the winner through instant runoff. And their conclusion, and most of the public's, was yes, indeed. In the election in 2002, when one of our representatives won with less than 31% of the vote, it seemed very, very clear to the Tidings and others that had instant runoff voting been in place, another councillor would have been elected instead. Of course, without it, it's impossible to tell. But I think that you will hear testimony from others. And if you don't, I will definitely follow up with a written answer to your question. Thank you very much.
Yes, Vice Chair Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say thank you for making the drive here and for your continued efforts.
Thank you very much.
Yes, one more question.
Question for you. Just real quick.
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In Ashland, do you have full preferential voting, or is it what's called optional preference? Full preferential meaning you rank every single candidate, no matter how many, or do you just rank the top two or three?
Madam Chair, Representative Thatcher, I believe to answer your question, the petition that is circulating to be placed on the ballot for Ashland. Ashland does not yet has not yet implemented it.
Can't do it yet.
But the particular petition would permit voters to rank as many candidates are on the ballot. The legislation in front of you, I believe, only permits voters to rank the top three. And I think others can explain there may be an amendment that will be proposed. The my understanding is that the limitation to just three was put in place because at the time that seemed to be what the equipment vendors were saying they could accommodate.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony. Thank you for attending our hearing that we held in Medford as well.
Thank you very much. And if I may add one more thing, Madam Chair.
Yes, please.
I did want to introduce my cohort, Susie Alfterhide, who is with me today. And she's lost her sight recently. But she implemented instant runoff voting in a number of organizations, most recently for the designation of the call letters for KSKQ radio, and reported that in that situation there was not a clear first choice vote among those forming the radio station, but with instant runoff voting it was very clear that KSKQ was the preferred second choice. So that's another advantage in informal uses of instant runoff. You can very clearly see what the consensus is of the group being polled. Again, thank
Great.
You.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for being here, and welcome to our committee. Next, we'll call John Gear, Blair Bobbier, and George Grosch. Please all come forward.
Madam Chair, can I just note that Pam got in a plug both for the Ashland Daily Tidings and for her the radio station.
Good job. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Blair Bobbier. I'm the Programs Director of the Civics Education League and Adjunct Professor of Political Science at Western Oregon University and a resident of the Greater Philomath Metropolitan Area. I'm here in support of House Bill 2761, which I believe would uphold the Oregon Constitution, improve our electoral process, and affirm the principle and practice of local control. This bill gives cities and counties a choice. It's not mandatory, but it gives them a choice whether or not to use a different and better election method for their local elections. Instant runoff voting is not something new or untested. It's been part of the Oregon Constitution for 99 years. 100 years ago, Oregon voters approved this, and it's now enshrined in our Constitution, Article 2, Section 16. As far as I know, we are the only state in the Union that has a preference voting provision in our Constitution. Preference voting much more accurately reflects the choices of the electorate, and it makes sure that candidates who win are supported by a majority of the voters. This is actually something that is a bit of a problem in our current electoral system. Under current Oregon law, a candidate only needs to have more votes than any other candidate. There's no majority vote provision. I wanted to just kind of show how this might work, a little show and tell. It's as easy as 1, 2, 3. voters rank the candidates in order of choice. So here someone might want to vote for candidate Jones as their first choice, but being a third-party candidate, Jones may not have much of a chance. So they think, well, Garcia's the one that is my backup choice. Smith is number three. Well, we'll get down to the election results, and we'll see that Garcia would come in 47%, Smith at 46%, and Jones, a third-party candidate, at 7%. Now, this may seem like you've got a clear winner, but when you look at it, there are more people voting against Garcia at this point than voting for Garcia. So with an instant runoff, just for the sake of simplicity, let's say that Jones and Garcia are politically aligned. Well, you just kind of scratch Jones off as the one getting the fewest votes, and the votes would transfer to Garcia, who would then have a clear majority at 54%. We'd have a clear winner. We'd know that that person actually has a mandate to govern and the support of a majority of voters.
And could you just explain, how did you arrive at that second result?
Sure. What would happen?
It looked like you were just adding the votes for the candidate that was eliminated.
Well, that's what I'm doing is maybe oversimplifying, but what you would do is you would go back and look at the ballots that were cast by the Jones voters, and then you'd see, oh, their second choice, for the sake of this example, unanimously was Garcia, and then the ballots are retabulated, taking into account the second choice votes. It's a very simple method. My children use this in grade school to pick their projects. It's used around the world. It's used to pick the Heisman Trophy winner. It's used by the American Political Science Association. It's used to pick the Academy Awards. There are some rather high-profile examples of races where we don't have majority winners. Presidential elections of 92, 96, and 2000. We've had two gubernatorial elections where we don't have a clear majority winner. So one of the prime benefits of this is ensuring majority rule. We get more choices on the ballot, which usually encourages higher voter turnout. There are no wasted votes. If you voted for Jones under our current system, that would be a wasted vote, or very possibly Jones might have been the spoiler in that race, and this election system eliminates the spoiler dynamic and the wasted vote syndrome. In San Francisco, one of the things they found was that this created better and more cooperative collegial campaigns because the candidates had to appeal to the supporters of their rivals in order to earn their second choice votes. So the New York Times had actually reported after the San Francisco election that the candidates were cooperating and held joint fundraisers, and a measure of civility that had not been seen before in those types of elections. Another advantage is that this can save money and eliminate two-round elections. I believe that both Portland and Eugene use two-round elections runoffs for their city campaigns, and this can save an extraordinary amount of money if we eliminate one of those. I've spoken with Nicole Williams recently by phone and in person, and over the years with John Lindback, Director of Elections, and I think they have very legitimate concerns about equipment and costs and the like. I think some of them can be addressed potentially in the context of this bill by some simple amendments that I think the proponents of the bill would agree to. And others of them, I think, need to be addressed further down the line. It's not necessarily this committee's responsibility to do that. What this does is simple enabling legislation, and therefore the burden then shifts to the counties and the cities. If the voters choose to enact this method, it's up to them to measure and weigh the cost and how much they want to pay. In terms of some of the specific concerns that were raised, ES&S is the company that counts the votes in San Francisco. Diebold, a major voting machine manufacturer, perhaps of some ill repute, does the Cambridge system. So there are systems and programs and software in place in other jurisdictions that presumably could be used here, or at least we could learn from them. One of the ways to get at initial results to do hand counts. Personally, I have more faith in a hand count than in a machine count. I spent 2 months in Ohio following the 2004 election, involved in the recount there. I could go on and on about the computer malfunctions there. I have faith in hand counts. In Ireland, the president is elected by instant runoff. They use paper ballots that are counted by hand. The results are known within 1 day. I think that this worked very well in San Francisco and in Burlington, Vermont. It was used recently, and my understanding is that there is a 99% success rate with people using the ballot. My grade school kids can do it. We can do it, too. A number of jurisdictions have approved this recently, including Tacoma, Washington. North Carolina is likely to institute this in 5 to 10 jurisdictions in the fall. Arkansas and Louisiana use this for overseas voters and for members of the military because they don't have time to send a ballot in and then get a runoff ballot in a separate election, so they use ranked choice. I think that's the gist of what I have to say. I'd just like to say in conclusion that there are other models and other systems out there, and I, for one, as a proponent of this, pledge to work with the clerks and with the Secretary of State's office to find the most efficient and effective way to bring this to Oregon and make it a viable choice for our cities and counties to use. Once again, it's up to the cities and counties to decide for themselves how much they want to pay for a first-class democracy. I do want to point out that democracy is evolving. the system of elections that we use now is basically from the Elizabethan era. Surgeons don't use leeches and handsaws anymore, and we can improve our electoral process as well. So I urge you to give the voters a choice, to give democracy a chance, and I think we can work out amendments to this bill, and when we do so, I would urge you to give it a due pass recommendation and send it to the full floor. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Representative Thatcher.
I can go second.
That's all right.
Representative. Okay. Well, my question would be why instant runoff voting and not range voting or the other forms of voting out there? Why this one over the other ones? They all have advantages and disadvantages. They all would produce a different result. In fact, I've read that IRV, if you reversed it and said vote for the worst candidate and rank them, you know, exactly opposite, that you could even contradict, you wouldn't get an exact opposite lineup as ranking them from favorite to least favorite. So I'm just wondering why you're focused on that particular form of voting rather than other forms that are out there.
Madam Chair, Representative Thatcher, there are a range of electoral improvements that I'd like to see happen. This is one of them. I think it's a viable one. I support it because it ensures majority representation. That's important. I support it because it eliminates spoiler and wasted vote syndromes. It's worked effectively in a number of other places. Range voting, for example, is something that I believe is proposed and supported by an extreme minority. It's not something that is proposed or supported in the voting rights community. I support proportional representation, which is used in most European and Latin American countries, but I don't think that it would necessarily work at the moment in this political climate. So if politics is the art of the practical or the possible, I'm happy to start with instant runoff voting.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you very much. I was going to see if you had the answer to that question. That have we seen elections where it is now currently available that have provided the main vote getter from not being the elected person at the end of the
Madam Chair, Representative Roblin, I don't know for certain. I have use this in organizations where we've conducted votes for chairs and the like, where the person who has the second place first choice votes by virtue, I got that right? Yes, second place first choice votes has leaped ahead by virtue of retabulating the ballots. I wouldn't be surprised if one of my colleagues has that information, but I will endeavor to get that information for you. I do think personally that it's important that regardless if the results don't change, that it's important that the winner has a clear majority and a mandate. I think that's very important.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is George Grosch. I'm a member of the Corvallis City Council and have been such since 1998. While I'm not here today speaking on behalf of the council, I can tell you that the council legislative committee is considering a position on House Bill 2761 today, and I have every reason to believe that that committee will come forward with a favorable recommendation, and it will go to the council this coming Monday for a vote of the council with information to come back to this committee in support of it. Corvallis, like a number of cities in Oregon, is a city that has looked at instant runoff voting. I can't make a better argument than the ones that have been made already, so I will be brief. This is really about local control if we do want a choice. It is allowed in the Oregon Constitution. It can be done. People, you know, I understand the hesitancy of county clerks, and it's different, it's a change. But my belief is if voters can understand the system, then county clerks can understand the system. And if there are aging poll workers that help count the ballots, I believe they can understand it. I have faith in the voters in the state of Oregon to be able to understand a system that's fairly straightforward, understanding that it could cause confusion for the people that have to implement that system. This has been enacted by the voters. It has been enshrined in the Oregon Constitution. It is something that localities should have an opportunity to do. I think it's fair. I think it's right, and I would hope that you would come forward with a due pass recommendation. Thank you
for your testimony, Vice Chair Berger.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Councillor, thank you for coming because you can answer a question that's been sort of in my head on this issue. Suppose this is authorized and Corvallis loves it and goes ahead. Would you then, as a city council, decide that you're going to vote councilors by this method, and then would you decide that you're going to expend city funds to do that? In other words, where do your voters weigh in on this? Because it clearly there's some different expenditures of funds. Your county clerk would say, oh, this is great, but in this legislation, as I understand it, the county clerk doesn't absorb the cost, the city would. So how would that play out, hypothetically?
Right. Madam Chair, Representative Berger, thank you. That's a very good question. I believe in the city of Corvallis that would require a charter change. That's the charter of the city of Corvallis. It does talk about how councilors are elected and how the mayor is elected, and so this would need to go to the voters. That's for a change to the charter in order to enact IRB if we chose to do that. So I have no expectation that this current council will take any action to move anything forward to the voters. We would just like to say that if that option were available, we'd like to have it. And I believe if it were to change in Corvallis, it would be a citizen-led initiative that would come to the council, and then the council would make a referral for a vote on a charter change.
Okay, thank you. That helps me.
Other questions? Okay, thank you. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. My name is John Gere, and greetings to the chairwoman and to the members, and especially to Representative Berger, my representative here.
Absolutely.
And I would like to address some of the concerns you've raised. I'll tell you a little bit about myself first. I'm an engineer by training and a veteran and now an attorney. I lived in the Northwest for many years, and I lived in Vancouver, Washington, where I was on a charter review commission in 1999, and I persuaded the city council to refer a IRV option to the voters and led the campaign that attained a successful result to add instant runoff voting option to elections for Vancouver. And changed the charter to permit that, and then ran into this issue of the state saying, well, that's all well and good, but we're not going to support that, and you know, we don't have the system. And so I guess in answer to Representative Berger's question about is this a solution in search of a problem, let me say no. We're almost in a chicken and egg problem where people say, well, show me you have interest in IRV. Well, if it's not on the menu, it's hard to show interest. Representative Rowland, I want to definitely say that having been a poll worker in a number of states, there is extreme dissatisfaction with elections now. Many times voters walk away confused. There are about 4% spoiled ballot rates nationally. That's with the simple plurality vote for one only. It's not as if we have the perfect system now and that there is frustration. I went to law school recently, and I was in Michigan, and I do want to tell you a story from there. In the 7th District, a open seat election drew 7 contenders for a primary in the Republican primary, which is tantamount to election in Kalamazoo in western Michigan, and the eventual winner attained only 24% of the vote and was sent to Congress because of the vote splitting and the spoiling of so many candidates seeking to represent the conservative views of the district. What happened is the most liberal member of the party got elected and then was replaced 2 years later when the voters basically threatened to keelhaul anyone who ran in the primary. And so the distortion and the result you keep asking for, show me that it's changed the result. It's hard to do that because what it does is it distorts. The system we have now distorts who can run, who chooses to run, and that doesn't leave the fingerprint that you're asking for in terms of, well, show me that it changed the result. I can say that in Ireland, the first woman president of Ireland, Mary Robinson, was elected without a majority of the first choice votes. She was the most popular candidate, as shown by her eventual election, but she did not have the most first choice votes. So she was a second choice winner. And it's emblematic of what happens when you increase voters' ranges of choice is that they're willing to consider a more central, moderate figure rather than the most extreme. With vote for one, we tend to either get the most extremes in primaries, and we don't have the one who's the consensus choice. IRV permits a consensus second choice that everybody or the majority of voters can get behind. The Washington experience, as you know, Pierce County recently adopted IRV through a voter referendum. The voters were very determined to have IRV. And the reason is, I really don't want to get into the merits unless I can answer questions about that, because this isn't a bill about the merits. This is a bill about letting local jurisdictions have that debate. And, you know, this will not be imposed on anyone in Oregon. This is about giving cities and counties the option to say, do we want to spend our money this way and use our resources this way? Do we want to have more positive elections where candidates are punished if they start slinging mud? IRV is very effective at discouraging negative campaigning because it is hard to bash somebody and then ask their voters for their second choice votes. So that's tending towards the merits, but it's definitely a system that is worth considering. I believe that it merits your due pass recommendation, and I just remembered I wanted to respond to Representative Thatcher's question. One of the reasons that I am a proponent of IRV, particularly as an Oregonian, is that it's in the Constitution. There are a number of other voting systems. There's a whole plethora of voting systems. If you want to get into the, you know, down the rabbit hole and find out that there's a million ways you can elect and make group choices, but there's only two that are mentioned in the Oregon Constitution and expressly promoted. And I think that you have somewhat of a duty to simply make real that provision in the Constitution that says Oregon voters should be allowed to choose this option. I would be very happy to answer any questions that you have for me.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Hunt.
Could I just ask if any of you have a sense, is ranking the top three the right number from your perspective, even if there are more candidates than three?
In Australia and in other places where this is used, some studies have shown that, well, in Australia you have to rank them all. But most studies that I have seen simply suggest that three is more than sufficient to do the job. I think ideally you would allow voters to make that choice. I mean, if I were starting from scratch, I would simply say let the voter rank as many. You know, if they only want to rank one and want to bullet vote, that's fine. If they want to rank three, if they want to rank 10, if they're in Portland and there's 10 candidates, I would favor that. But I think in practical terms, I've never heard of an election that went to the fourth preferences.
And I would just say, Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, that it's largely a function of the equipment and software. If that can accommodate as many choices as possible, great. Some of them seem to work better or perhaps only with three choices, and that's why the legislation is the way it is.
I'm sorry, may I add
I'm
one
sorry,
more?
Let me just say that was Mr. Bobbier.
Yes, right? Thank you.
May I add one more thing?
Bobbier?
Bobbier.
Yes, please go ahead and thank identify you. Yourself. So
thank you. It's John Gear again, and I just want to say I respect the concerns expressed by the county clerks. I do not think it's certain that we need double ballots because what has to change on an all-mail system is not the ballot. The ballot has to change slightly to allow the voter to darken in a one, two, or three rather than a one only, but it's the software for counting. And the scanners that take the image of the ballot currently don't take an image and record the first, second, third choices, which is what has to happen to use IRV. But as far as the interface with the voter, it need not necessarily require a second ballot because it's simply a matter of adding. It's like the standardized bubble tests. You add a few more columns to allow that 1-2-3 choice rather than only allowing a single column for vote for one only. And I think that mention of mail voting simply brings up this final issue, is that go back 20 years and every concern expressed about IRV was expressed about mail balloting. You know, it's a change. It's going to cost a fortune. It's hard. We've never done it. Voters will hate it. You know, and now mail balloting is sacrosanct. And I really urge you to remember that when you're considering change, is that change is not always hated. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we'll call John Lindbeck. And then, members, after that, we do have a witness who wished to testify by telephone, so we'll be calling them. Morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'm John Lindbeck, Director of Elections in the Secretary of State's office. I'd like to go through a series of issues with you today in regards to instant runoff voting, but I've been talking about this issue for 12 years, ever since I first got into this line of work. This issue seems to follow me around. I dealt with it when I was in Alaska, and I've dealt with it for the entire 6 years that I've been here. I'd like you all to think back to Florida in 2000 and the lessons that we learned in Florida in 2000. And we learned three lessons, basically. One, you need to keep it simple with regards to elections. Two, you need to count quickly and accurately, or people lose their confidence in the election system. And three, you need to treat all voters alike. And when I review instant runoff voting, or preferential voting, as the advocates have called it, I strongly believe that it flunks all three tests. And I do believe that this is far more than a bill just about the details, that it is the responsibility of the Secretary of State's office as the chief elections official and is the responsibility of legislators to consider merits as well as the details when looking at legislation like this. First, let's go into this, whether or not it's simple. I think every elections official in Oregon and across the nation would tell you that simplicity is extremely important, and that we have a number of voters who make mistakes under the current system when the choices are two or three. And when you expand out the responsibility of the voter to choose to make more choices than that in a single race, it's just simply a fact that mistakes will increase. There's no doubt about that in any of our minds. And so we would be flunking the lesson learned in Florida by making this election more complicated rather than keeping it simple. In regards to counting quickly and accurately, what our problem here is not in Oregon in regards to counting the votes in an instant runoff voting system, it's not that there are no machines available nationwide that do this. There are no central count optical scanners that do this currently. In San Francisco, they vote at the polling place, and they use what are called precinct counters. In other jurisdictions where they are using this currently, they use touchscreens. And for that polling place voting equipment, there are systems available out there, but we don't use that in Oregon. We use what are called central count high-speed scanners. And I've checked with each of the vendors who operates equipment or who make equipment and sell it to people for counting votes, and none of them market a high-speed scanner that is now capable, in terms of its software, of counting instant runoff voting as contemplated by this bill. And what they have told me, of course, is that they don't want to go to the R&D costs until somebody decides to do it and they know exactly what the rules are. And so what that means then is some local jurisdiction, let's say Ashland decides to go ahead and do this, gets to pay the R&D costs for the development of the system, and then they go off and sell it to everybody around the country after Ashland or Corvallis or whatever local jurisdiction decided to go ahead and do this, have decided that they want to do instant runoff voting. There's a provision in this bill that says that we can't approve a new tally system for Oregon that doesn't include or isn't capable of calculating the votes for an instant runoff voting race. We would vigorously oppose that in the Secretary of State's office. That would pretty much keep our counties from purchasing any new systems. And I just don't think that's a good way of doing business. We have a hard enough time in Oregon, considering we're a small market, getting people to come in, getting companies to come in and get their stuff certified here so that we can use it. And this will just place more of a disincentive on companies to do that. Because none of our machines are capable of doing that, we'll be doing it by hand counts. And hand counts are notoriously the most inaccurate way to count votes. People tend to forget that the reason that we went to machine counts in America in the first place was to deal with the inaccuracies of hand counts across the nation and the vulnerabilities to fraud. And we all heard stories that were absolutely true about inaccurate hand count and fraudulent hand counts in places like Chicago and Texas. And that was the whole reason why we went to machine voting in the first place. And so I would vigorously, as a professional who's operated in this field for 12 years, disagree with anyone who says that hand counts are necessarily more accurate than a machine count. That's just not simply, that's simply not true and borne out by history. I want to talk to you about the third one. Well, since you'd have to go to hand counts, that provides a problem with the lesson learned in Florida about counting votes quickly and accurately. I want to go to the third issue, which is treating all voters alike. And here's where I think this system really flunks the test. And I have a little sample ballot to show you to try to illustrate this point.
Can we dim the lights?
I'm not sure how to...
Here we are.
There you all are.
I've written in a vote for Hunt, you know.
Wait a minute, I had your vote.
No, I have some of you switching parties in here. But since I know you're all eminently qualified to become governor someday, I have you all running for governor in 2010. And the ballot would look something like this under this bill, in which you would have the voter would be asked to choose the first, second, and third choice among the available candidates. Let's just say for discussion purposes that the race turned out exactly this way, that Chair Rosenbaum ended up in first place.
Yeah.
Mr. Hunt ended up in last place. And that it's time to figure out who won this thing because Chair Rosenbaum got 49.5% of the vote. So we would go in and we would eliminate Mr. Hunt.
See you, Dave.
That was my only evidence.
He's gone.
I'm in the Pacific Green Party. Right.
and the people that voted for Mr. Hunt, we would have to go back and segregate those ballots and find his ballots and then figure out who their second choice was and do all this by hand. And, you know, let's just say for discussion purposes, there were enough votes there for Chair Rosenbaum in the recalculation. So that took her over 50%. So let's think about that. What does that mean? That means that Mr. Hunt's voters got two bites of the apple in the equation of who decided the outcome of this race, well, everybody else got one. That is not treating all voters alike. That's adding extra weight, and Mr. Hunt's voters count more. If there had not been enough to drive Chair Rosenbaum over the top, we would have gone to Mr. Esquivel and eliminated his, and then that pool of voters would have been the ones where essentially they got more of a say in who won than everybody else. That's not fair. It's not fair to the voters, and I strongly believe that that flunks the test of Bush v. Gore, in which we are now required, as a result of that landmark decision in 2000, to treat all voters alike. Now, there's been a lot.
Just a moment. Representative Roblin has a question.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I'm hearing you say, had, for whatever reason, we had just independently said that the fourth place person's votes don't get counted, cross that box now, it could have made a totally different result.
That's right.
With respect to who got the most, as opposed to just that one person at the bottom.
That's right. This decision on whether or not you just rank three or all seven is vitally important in determining the outcome of who's going to win this thing. So, but I've talked to this, and I've been arguing with the advocates for this for 12 years. And when I make this argument, they say, oh, no, that's not true, because this is like a runoff. And so we just assume that in the runoff, the votes for the people who voted for these folks, that all of their votes would stay the same. And my reaction to that is, what right do you have to make that decision? You have no right to make that decision. You're making a decision for me at that point. In a conventional runoff, we would have Chair Rosenbaum and Vice Chair Berger running against each other. The noise of the other candidates is gone. There's a period for campaigning. I get a chance to reevaluate those two candidates in the light of this new campaign, and I get to make that choice of who I'm going to vote for in round two. But they're making that choice for me in an instant runoff voting system, and I think they have no right to make that choice for me or you or any other voter in the state of Oregon, and that's why I think this is extremely important in terms of treating all voters alike.
Of course, you're applying it to a statewide office when the bill only allows it as an option for...
Right, but why would that dynamic be any different for any office?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Vice Chair Buckley.
Thank you. Jen, with great respect for all your work, I absolutely disagree. For one thing, using Bush versus Gore as the... I think this is something the courts would have to decide, but the Supreme Court did say that that case applied only to the election of Bush v. Gore. It also pushes a very sore point, because one of the reasons instant runoff voting is so popular is because there's a passionate belief that if there was something like instant runoff voting, we would not have the president that we have today, and our country's history would be much different than it is now. So I do think this bill does not in any way address the constitutional issue of treating every voter the same. There's nothing in this bill that addresses that. And this would be an issue that if an advocate was passionately believing that this did violate voting rights, they would be able to take it to the courts to decide. There's nothing in this bill that would keep an advocate from going to court and saying, my voting rights are being impaired because of this system. This is simply allowing a city or a county to attempt to put into place this voting system if they should so desire. So, again, I think raising the constitutional issue, I guess my question would be, how do you respond to the constitutional issue that we have this in the Oregon Constitution, that preference voting being part of our law?
Chair Rosenbaum and Representative Buckley, thanks for the question. The Oregon Constitution was written how many years ago? 100 and some years ago, 150. There's a reference to preference voting, but the way these things have progressed through the years, and the different flavors of this that have been offered throughout the country, including this one, I have no idea whether what's contemplated in this bill is exactly what they were referring to when they referred to preference voting 150 years ago. I haven't done the research to go back to the constitutional minutes or whatever may be around that would help us try to determine that. But if I was going to sue over this, that would be the first place certainly one of the major issues I would go look at. When they put preference voting in the Constitution a whole long time ago, did they mean what is contemplated by this bill? I have no idea. And one of the reasons why I think it's important to ask that question is that these proposals have changed just in the 12 years that I've been working on this issue. Some rank all seven. Some now it's apparently du jour, you know, the issue of the day to rank just three. And one of the issues that the vendors have talked about to me in terms of, you know, when I say, why haven't you developed this for central count optical scanners, they say, we don't know how to do it because every jurisdiction that looks at this takes a slightly different tact to how they want to do it. And I would strongly disagree that Bush v. Gore doesn't apply to everybody these days. I think that any time that we implement an election system in which we do not treat all voters alike, we're very vulnerable as a result of that decision.
Quick follow-up.
Yeah, follow-up.
Thank you. I would agree with you that I believe reason dictates that Bush v. Gore should apply. The Supreme Court, in their decision, stated that it doesn't. So I do think that's a problem that we do have to face. Thank you.
Please continue.
I put for distribution to you, this was on the ballot in Eugene a few years ago, 2001. The voters soundly rejected it in Eugene in 2001. The Register Guard did an excellent job of researching the issue, and I included for you a copy of a story out of Ann Arbor, Michigan, some years back that implemented this and had a close race. And the thing was so messed up by the time they got done that the voters turned around and rejected it again 3 years later. In the meanwhile, putting their elections office through the turmoil of switching to a whole new system and then switching back. And that's why I think it's extremely important to think very carefully about what's allowed and what's not allowed here, because our election system is very vulnerable right now. It's extremely vulnerable. We've been asked to deal with a number of changes. We've spent a lot of money, and instituting changes like this need to be well considered and well thought out. And my prediction is the next time we have a close race in any of these other jurisdictions around the country that have used this, they're going to have a situation like Ann Arbor. Representative Roblin, your question in regards to races that, you know, did the top person win anyway? I asked that specific question after the first round of voting in San Francisco, and the person who finished first in the early round ended up winning anyway in each of those cases. Now, I think they've had some more elections since then, and I'd be glad to check on that for you. Anyway, I'll leave my comments there at this point. I do have some specific comments on the bill. I don't think it works to have us design ballots. Frankly, we're not in the business of designing ballots. Counties do a perfectly good job of doing that now, and I don't understand why that responsibility has been handed to us. And there's several other comments I would have on the specifics of the bill that may be more appropriate for a work session or whatever.
Are there any other questions? Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm interested, John, if, let's say that were the, because the better example of the problem right now is, let's say that were a mayoral race in Salem, same seven candidates, and Chair Rosenbaum received 20% of the vote. The rest of the candidates received less than that. She would win the race. Today there would be no runoff. It would be done. She would just win the race. So you'd have 80% of the people voting for another candidate, 20% of the people voting for Chair Rosenbaum, and she wins the race. Do you have another? I mean, that's the reality of the situation today in local races across the state, as well as in primary races. Do you have another suggested change of how we would address that?
Yeah, conventional runoffs. If that's a big issue for them, and a community has that problem, they should consider conventional runoffs if that's a big issue for them and they care about that. Conventional runoffs, though they involve some expense, at least treat every voter alike.
Follow up.
If I could follow up. So under conventional runoff, you would either have to do it in a way that would have the conventional runoff after the November election, mm-hmm. thereby shortening the time period for the transition into the office for the eventual winner, as I think Louisiana and maybe one other state do. Or you would have to back off the original election to an election which had far less turnout than the November election does. I mean, it seems to me that the one of the things I like most about instant runoff voting is you take advantage of the fact that you've got all the voters and you have a large percentage of the voters there. You eliminate the situation where somebody could win with 20% or even less of the vote, and you don't go to the expense of having another election.
Well, it depends on what's more important to you, expense or treating all voters alike. And it's my job as the elections director to advocate for treating all voters alike. Lots of people have runoffs. Lots of people do it. Have fairly short times in which to do that, and it's built into their rules. I am not a person, frankly, that believes that because somebody gets left less than 50% of the vote that the Republic is going to dry up and go away. We've operated on so-called first-past-the-post elections in America for 200 years, and our democracy has done quite well. I agree with Ms. Representative Berger's comments earlier, very early in here, in that this is a solution looking for a problem. I don't believe in wasted votes. Just because I voted for a loser, I don't consider my vote wasted. What does that mean, wasted vote? If you vote your convictions, there is no such thing as a wasted vote. Your candidate may not win. So, I just don't buy into that philosophy.
Follow up.
I think if you had voted for Ralph Nader in 2000, you might have a different perspective.
Well,
you don't need to respond to that. I don't want to unveil who you voted for in 2000. Yeah.
Representative Roblin.
The issue with wasted vote for me, I mean, looking at this, and I like to analyze things, but in this particular election, the people who voted for Sal still have a wasted vote. The only person that didn't have a wasted vote were the group at the bottom. Everybody else still has a wasted vote if the outcome is found because of that. And if, just for randomness, you crossed out the third place person and checked all the votes then, it might have a totally different outcome than having selected that third person, which means that those people had a greater influence than the people who voted in the second place because they didn't come out last. I mean, each one of those people, each time you cross out one of those lines there, you can have a different outcome for that election.
Representative Roblin, I asked the question a few years ago when I was in a debate with some advocates about this, is why shouldn't everybody's second vote factor into the equation of who wins? Oh, no, we don't want to do that. Well, why not? Because they want those folks that vote for this last place candidate or the second to the last place candidate, they want their votes to carry more weight than the rest of us. It's just not fair.
Okay. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. I had found an example of, apparently in London they used the IRV vote for their mayoral candidates. Apparently 2000, in the mayoral election, the winner received 45% of the vote, even with the instant runoff voting. So I guess it doesn't always yield a majority. And then this is from a Berkeley, California City Council member, so not the bastion of conservatism here, so I'm just wanted to point that out here. Mm-hmm. It says that all forms of IRV except full preference result in decreased participation in the higher rounds. For example, in the London mayoral election, only 78% of the voters had their ballots counted in the second round, and the total voter turnout was only 33%. So 300,000 votes were not counted in the second round, which produced the winner. So I guess I can kind of see your point on it not being equal.
Although under the language of this bill, it does require eventually a majority to be elected. So I don't think, I mean, you just keep going through this process until somebody does get more than 50%.
You can only go three places.
My understanding.
You can only go three places because you're only going to have three preferences. So eventually you might run out of opportunities. Mm. I'd have to look at that and see. But.
Okay, well, I'm sure there's a lot more we could discuss, and we thank you very much for being here. We do want to make sure we get to our telephone witness, so Jim, can you dial that person up and see if we can reach them?
Hello.
Hi, is this Justin Krug?
Yes, this is he.
Hi, Justin. This is Representative Diane Rosenbaum, Chair of the Elections Ethics and Rules Committee, calling from Salem.
Hi, Chair Rosenbaum.
Great. Thanks a lot for your patience. And we are in a public hearing on House Bill 2761. I understand you wish to testify.
Yes, I have some additional information concerning...
And could you please identify yourself for our record and then go ahead?
Yes, my name is Justin Krug. I'm a citizen of Happy Valley, Oregon. And with regard to the statement that was mentioned previously, I would just like to mention that the Public Research Institute analyzed the voting in San Francisco in 2005, which had done a traditional runoff and then was voted to do the instant runoff. And voters expressed a preference for they called it the ranked choice voting, over the traditional system by a margin of over 3-1, according to this study done by the Public Research Institute. And in addition, I would like to say that regarding concerns that will the outcome of the election be changed, I would like to say that even if in the vast majority of the times the election results are not changed, even if there is a small minority of times in which the election results are changed, that minority is the will of the people. And the will of the people should be considered in a democracy. And I believe that's the main point that I would like to make before you today, is that the will of the people, it needs to take precedence over concerns about technicalities. While those are important in terms of software, etc., I think the main issue is what is more fair for the voters, what is more fair in a democracy.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. Questions? Representative Roblin.
I would just ask, I don't know if you were listening to the previous one, but currently the way it's set up, the person getting the least votes would be knocked off, and then they would retally their second place votes. What if the people who voted for the second from the bottom's votes were taken off and they retallied the second? That came out to a different winner than it would have if the bottom person's votes had been not counted.
Well, so I was unable to see the diagram, yeah. So I can't comment specifically, but
it's trying to figure out which will, what I'm getting at.
If a majority of the voters vote for a certain candidate, then you are not discounting anyone's vote because the majority of the voters have chosen that particular candidate. So if you eliminate the last person, and somebody else may wish to comment, another one of the supporters, Blair, may wish to comment about this as well, but in my opinion, if you eliminate the least vote getter and then tack on those votes to their second choice votes, as long as you achieve a majority, then there is no quote-unquote wasted vote, or there is no alternate outcome, because the majority of the people, regardless of how the second place votes would be tallied, if a majority go to that person, then it does not change the outcome. However, I would like to allow someone else with more expertise than I perhaps comment on that issue.
Yeah.
Representative Roblin?
Just a little follow-up. I'm just saying that you can get a majority of the people in a number of different ways. And which majority is the one that's the most correct is the concern I have.
Right. Okay. I don't see any other questions, Justin, so thank you very much for your testimony.
May I add a couple more details? I apologize if I'm speaking out of turn here.
No problem.
The first time I've ever testified.
Sure, go ahead.
I'd just like to point out that, again, voters, this is passed in many places across the country, internationally. In Oakland, the voters approved this by 69%, 56% in Davis. In Berkeley, a ballot measure passed by 72%, while in Minneapolis, it was 65% of the voters passed an IRB ballot measure, as 53% of the voters in Pierce County, Washington. This is not something that's new. It's not a fad. I believe this is a more fair way of conducting elections in our current plurality system, and which does not even allow for a majority, does not require a majority to elect a candidate.
Okay. Thank you very much for those details, and thank you again for being with us this morning.
Thank you for calling me.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
And next we'll call, we have quite a few more people to testify. Alan Zendel, Philard Ryan, and David Delk, please come forward. We do have a floor session coming up at 10:30, so if you could please assemble and be as brief as possible. Somebody can go ahead.
Chair Rosenbaum and committee, my name is Alan Zundell. I live in Eugene, Oregon, and I'm testifying in support of this bill. I was a political scientist, and over the course of my career, I've become very concerned about trends of U.S. citizens becoming more and more disaffected with our political system. So I am concerned about the state of our democracy. Fewer people joining political organizations, more and more people saying parties don't represent their point of view, more and more people expressing the sense that government represents special interests and not them, fewer and fewer people voting in elections. All these things are signs of disturbing trends to me. While I was a professor, my last position was associate professor with tenure at the University of Nevada. Somebody introduced me to the idea of instant runoff voting, and I saw the potential of this for addressing a lot of those problems. I wasn't able at the time to look into it very deeply because my field of expertise is a different area. But more recently, I did review the research that is out there on instant runoff voting, and I found that it confirms the supporters' position that it can address these problems, not solve them all, but make them better. Improve the conditions. Citizens like this where they've tried it. They feel happier about democracy in places where it's been used. They prefer the system to previous systems when it's replaced it. Over and over, I've seen the evidence supports that position. Now, the evidence is still sketchy because it hasn't been used in a lot of places, but this has been enough to convince me that this is a very good idea and is worthy of further debate, at least at the local level, to see if districts want to attempt it. I've given you a written testimony that has results of my own personal research, and there's a summary on the first page, so I'll close here if you want to ask me any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, please go
Could
ahead.
Could I add one thing, though?
Yes, go
ahead. The idea of, I'm sorry, it just occurred to me because this wasn't my what I prepared to talk about, but the one person, one vote issue I think is a non-issue personally. Every voter gets one ballot in each round. Each ballot is counted only once. It's not an assumption on the part of people promoting this that the voter wants their second choice to be replacing their first choice if it's not supported. It's explicit. The voters understand that. If your first choice doesn't get enough support to win, it goes to your second choice. It's just a non-issue to me.
Now we have a question. Representative Redland.
If you bring up that part, then why, because of that, I mean, the question I have is the same one that was raised just the last testifier. The only people who really get the chance to change their vote in the second round are those people in the bottom round. So they actually do get a second bite at the apple that no one else does. And any one of the other people could have been last, and it would have changed the outcome of the election.
The people whose first choice is still in the election wouldn't want to change their vote because their first choice is still in the race. So you're not getting a second bite of the apple any more than anybody else.
Follow up.
That's an assumption you're making, that that would be their name.
That's explicit in the way that it runs. Voters understand that if your choice doesn't get enough support to win, you can have somebody else replace them. But the voters who vote for the ones that aren't eliminated understand that this is the person you're going to have each round unless they're eliminated. Everybody understands that. Everybody in the final round gets one vote.
Okay. Thank you very much. Please go ahead.
Yeah, my name's David Delk, and I'm a resident of Portland. I really appreciate your having a hearing on this issue. It's been an important issue for me for a very long time. I think from the very first time that I voted, I was confronted with the question of, would my vote be wasted if I voted for the candidate I really wanted? Because I have always been somewhat on the periphery of the voting process. And so in almost every election I've been confronted with that. Do I vote for the candidate I really want and see the candidate I least like to be elected as a result? Do I vote the way I want and then be called a spoiler, or have the candidate I wanted be termed a spoiler? The question before us, I think, really is do we want to have a system which actually allows people to be honest in the way they vote? And do we want to have a system that actually registers the votes and the opinions of people, as opposed to just showing us what the two major parties want us to see or want us to hear? And I really feel like democracy is diminished when we don't have a full range of the ability to rank our candidates and to actually express who we really want to vote for. And so I hope that you will pass this out of this committee with a due pass recommendation. I also wanted to respond to, I think it was Representative Berger, who said this seemed to be a solution in the search of a problem. You know, it most of the time when I've been confronted with this, it has been at the national level voting for president. But it also affects so many more of our elections in a lot of ways. And I just want to point out, my friend Lisa Million ran for a water board position, I think, in Tigard a number of years ago. And she was one of four or five candidates. And she won that race with just slightly over 20% of the vote. What did the other 80% of the people want? Who was she really representing when she took her position? We don't really know, because our present system allows less than majority candidates to assume office. And I think that's wrong. And we have a simple solution for that, and that is the proposal that's before us today, instant runoff voting. Additionally, most of the other things that I was going to comment on have already been commented on, so I guess I'll just pass on that. I did have a copy of the bill that Representative Buckley, or excuse me, of the letter that Representative Buckley referred to from Multnomah County Commissioner Jeff Kogan, and so I passed that on to you. I also do know that City Commissioner Eric Sten will be writing a letter in support of this bill. He did write a letter when it was before this committee in the previous session, and I should have copied that and given that to you also, but I did forget. There is a strong advantage for the City of Portland to use instant runoff voting, because they do have the voter-owned elections. Instant runoff voting would eliminate the primary election, and so it would be cheaper both for the city in conducting only a single election. It would also be less expensive, because they would be funding publicly funded candidates for only one election cycle. And I think that's what Eric Sand is going to have make reference to in his letter. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions? Okay, please proceed.
Good morning. My name is Phillard Ryan. I'm from Portland. I support this bill. In the interest of time, I'm going to confine myself to one aspect of the spoiler issue and some quick responses to elections officials. I'd like to use real-life examples that you're all very familiar with, and so even though this bill specifically refers to local elections and local control, let's take a look at some past governor and president elections. So, Here we have Roberts, Frohnmeyer, Mobley, Kulongoski, Saxton, Westland, Clinton, Bush, Perot, and Bush, Gore, Nader. Now, I'm going to hazard a guess that among these four races, each of you has some spoiler situation that you felt strongly about and that was important to you, where the spoiler effect made a difference to you personally, and that, you know, it made a difference to lots of people, you know, lots of discussions, lots of arguments, lots of media coverage about the spoiler effect. And think to all the time and personal energy that people spent arguing about this bug in the system, okay, and talking about whether or not a person should vote for the candidate of their choice, okay. Now, please imagine that all that time and energy that had been used talking about that, arguing about that, had instead been spent discussing real issues. Okay, things that actually matter, solving problems, or even just having relatively good-natured discussions about the merits of these various candidates and who would actually do the best job. So that is one of the benefits of instant runoff among many, something that this bill would allow in local elections, and, you know, stop this huge waste of time and let people focus on things that actually matter. A quick note regarding some things that Nicole Williams brought up. She was talking about the difficulty of implementing instant runoff because of the lack of readiness. Double ballots because we're not ready. Hand tally because we're not ready. More storage because we're not ready. Perfectly valid concerns, but the question is, when are we going to be ready? And a lot of it has to do with whether laws like this exist. I testified at the 2004 Multnomah County Charter Review Committee, and asking about instant runoff there. And the local director of elections was there, and John Lindbeck also provided testimony in absentia, saying, you know, Oregon law does not provide for this. And Multnomah County Charter Review Committee, they just closed their ears because, you know, they didn't want to take the first step. So something has to happen first. So thank you very much, and I hope that you will forward this with a due pass recommendation with whatever amendments are necessary.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Okay.
One of the things which has come up a number of times has been the question.
Could you please identify yourself?
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is David Delp from Portland. One of the things that's come up a number of times has been the question about why have only allow three rankings, and that's a question which many people who have been proponents of instant runoff voting have also asked why that's in the bill, and there's no logical reason why we should only allow voters to rank their top three choices. I have in my testimony proposed some language that would get around that, and it would allow, depending on the type of equipment which is available, ranking more than three candidates if needed, and but only if the equipment allowed that. But it would also require that at least three rankings be available. Thank you.
Senator Roebling.
When they ask, they follow up. They always pose a question. What the opportunity gave me today, actually three is better to me, because if you have eight people in the election, at least then five others get their second place votes counted. I mean, the other one eliminates everybody except one, so those people get a second vote, whereas in that one at least, there's a group of people whose votes get added in there to make a larger choice of who's getting to vote the second time. Now, it's still disenfranchises three others, but that's a different issue, or two others.
If I could respond to that, I think there's language in the bill, and Representative Buckley might verify this. There's language in the bill which says that candidates who get, I think, less than 10% of the vote or less than 500 votes are eliminated in the first round. So that would take care of some of your, I think would take care of some of your question.
Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. We have, I think, one more person still signed up. Judy Barnes, please come forward.
Thank
Good morning. Thanks for your patience.
Good morning. Thank you for allowing me to testify. My name is Judy Barnes. I'm a resident of the Sunnyside neighborhood in Southeast Portland and a constituent of Chair Rosenbaum. And I want to begin by thanking Representative Buckley for introducing and sponsoring H.R. 2761, a bill that would allow, upon the request of the voters, but allow cities and counties in the state of Oregon to adopt instant runoff voting. It doesn't mandate anything. It doesn't require anything. It merely gives us, the voters, to go after our representatives at the city and county level, asking that we use this and that we experiment with it in our local jurisdictions. I'm one of those people who is here because of my concerns about the state of our democracy nationally, statewide. I think and the thing that appeals to me about instant runoff voting is that it eliminates the spoiler effect and thereby allows for minority parties and candidates to have their views are allowed to be aired before the public. And I believe this is important because it restores freedom of choice of voters, it restores competition in the market, the free market of ideas, and that the current system we have, which, by the way, is only one of a number of ways you can run a democracy, we have an electoral system which is a two-party winner-take-all system. Proportional representation is the way most democracies run their systems. One of the flaws, and it is a flaw, I believe, in the two-party winner-take-all system. In fact, the founders of our country didn't intend for there to be parties. They intended for voters to have freedom of choice completely. And this was not something in our Constitution. It's something that's evolved. And I think that there are dangers in minority views being shut out of the process because you have an increasing feeling on the part of voters that their government doesn't represent them, their views are never aired, their solutions, their ideas. You know, it doesn't tap into the potential that a free marketplace of ideas has for producing most innovative solutions. That's what our free economic marketplace is known for. And we have some very serious challenges that face us, ahead of us, at the state and national level and county level that need everyone's input. And so I see IRB as a way to bring those ideas and solutions into the picture. And a couple of points. I'm not going through what I had originally planned to testify because many of the points have already been made, but I'd like to address a few points that have been made. My research indicates to me that the IRV provisions in our Constitution, Article 2, Section 16 of our Constitution, were instituted in 1908, so that's about a century ago, through the initiative process. The voters, and one has to wonder how it is that the voters of this state in 1908 saw the need for a reform to our election system. One has to go back historically and wonder what were the conditions which led a majority of people in this state to favor a constitutional amendment providing us this tool. I would say that 100 years later, we have conditions which may be very similar, and we need that tool in our toolbox. And this legislation would allow us to experiment, to use that and see how voters like it. It's not a mandate. It's a permission. It allows things to move forward. I'd also like to address the issue raised by the gentleman from the Secretary of State's office with regard to the fairness of the vote and that voters aren't treated the same. I'm not a mathematician myself, but I have a friend who teaches mathematics at the college level. She's a professor of mathematics, and she wasn't able to be here today, but her comment to me has been that at the American Mathematical Association has investigated IRV as a voting system and has decided that statistically it is the most fair voting system that exists, and they use it internally for their own elections. I'd be happy to acquire some more information and pass that along if you'd like, or refer you to her. I sincerely believe that it's time that we make some changes to our voting system. I also like to raise the issue that a voting election process which shuts out minority ideas and views, which then leads to apathy, also leads to frustration. And I would contend that some of that frustration in our state gets directed toward an increased use of the initiative process. And if people were able to raise the ideas and have the concerns that they have really got a hearing in the election process, no matter what side of the issue you're on, if we had a broader field of issues being discussed, that there would be less need for recourse to that. That tool, which was also provided us back in the same time period in our state's history. So for these reasons, I would heartily recommend you consider this and recommend it with a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Judy. And I think we are really out of time. Are there
just
any final questions? Go ahead, Representative Rubble.
Just one comment. I don't like people using the word spoiler personally, because I think those people are genuinely interested in presenting an opinion different than the major parties. That's why they ran. And we discount who they are and what they're doing when we call them spoilers all the time. That frustrates me a little bit, because I think what you're saying is we want more of those ideas out there, and then we discount them by saying that they were spoilers because they put their opinions in. And I get that just frustrates me.
Yes, I would agree. It's a term that's in common usage, which really doesn't represent the feeling that I have about the vote. I think they have a right, and we need to hear their ideas.
I agree.
And so really the problem is that, as David Duck represented before, that as a voter, you're torn between voting for the ideas the candidate whose ideas you best think are the solution and the way forward, for fear that if you do vote for them, you'll actually end up with a candidate whose ideas you least support. And that's the problem we need to fix.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. Thank you to everyone who testified. We've had some excellent testimony today. And that concludes our hearing on House Bill 2761. I will close the public hearing. And we are adjourned.
Thanks.